Namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Jenny Bloom is in the house. Very excited today. I got Jenny to come over and have a chat with me. So we're going to talk about this, that, and the other thing. And here we go.
Namaste, Jenny.
Namaste, Peter.
Yeah. How are you?
I am doing good.
Yeah. I'm excited to have you in the podcast zone again.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah.
It's a good zone.
Yeah. I've been having fun. Got to have a nice chat with Douglas Stewart.
Fun.
That was really great.
Fun. I'm always so impressed by everything he does.
Yeah. Yeah, I made that comment when I read his bio that everyone I know says, oh, I love Douglas.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going off to France in August.
Yay!
Yeah. Jenny's going to be primo assistant on the retreat.
I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We'll all be sleeping in individual wagons.
At least I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along the side of the river in Normandy.
Yeah. Or in the chateau.
Eating organic.
The Camembert Chateau. The place we're going to used to be a Camembert factory.
Oh, my God.
So that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We thought we might talk a little bit about the retreat, but also just not specifically, but just in general and the kinds of things that are at play in this notion of living life creatively, figuring out what it is that you want to do with your life.
Mm-hmm. How to create value. Like what the value you're organically creating is. Because especially as a creative person, it can be a challenge to figure out how to create a structure and a value for the thing that you do that you love to do.
Exactly.
So that you can be supported in your life.
Yeah. And I've been reading Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic, where she says, you know, the notion of a creative person is a redundancy because people by their nature are creative. If you go back into history, everyone was always inventing whatever because that's what we do. We mm-hmm. make up a way to do things. We're not like an animal that's mm-hmm. just walking around and leaving everything behind. We figure out a system and we put the thing in a container. And if there's no container, we make the container and then so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. We make a ritual around how we do it and mm-hmm. invite the people to the ritual, whether it's dinner or something spiritual. So we are all creative.
I love that, Peter. I really love that. Yeah. It just reminds me of, like, it gives me like a whole scope and a spectrum to look at. I think that in so many ways, our phones and like the technology that's at our fingertips can make, like, although there are great benefits to it, it can also really restrict our ability to be in connection with that unbound potential, that source energy, and how we translate it into creating things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday I was had the good fortune to lead a meditation as part of an art installation in Dumbo. And in working with this piece, it was done by two Finnish artists. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. they had traveled around New York and gathered stuff, and they have an interest in shamanism and working with objects and altars and things like that. So they had constructed this art piece that was essentially based around that theme of an altar made from things from New York, like taking a trip, and then the trip became the ritual, and then the outcome of the ritual was this object of worship, you know, that you would sit around it and you could have experience. But in just sort of riffing on the experience of the art piece in leading the meditation, you know, I sort of paraphrase some of the ways we talk in Ishta about what we experience. And I talked about the ordinary life that we're engaged in, and that through doing our practice, we create a transition. And the transition allows us to experience the extraordinary. But it's only extraordinary if you don't do it. Like, if you're not doing that routinely, it's extraordinary.
Right.
Otherwise, if you're always going into that space, if you're always tapping into what you just called the infinite intelligence or the unbound intelligence, then that's ordinary too. Mm-hmm. It's just a different aspect of of what we are and right. how we work.
It's magic, and then it's no big deal.
Right, exactly.
And some of my friends get really annoyed when I say things like that, because I used to be all about the magic and all about the psychic abilities and all of these cool cities and what can happen when you practice. And I was really obsessed with that super special space.
Right.
And because I have great teachers who have reminded me over and over again that's cool, Jenny, but you still got to practice, and you still like really that grounding is a fundamental piece for me. Now in my life, I cool things happen all the time, very special things, but it's exactly what you're saying. It's part of the normal day to day.
Right.
That I see, like I see people I know everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's really cool. But I used to, when I was younger, when it happened, I would get like obsessed.
Right. The mind goes off into a story about it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm seeing this person, it must mean this and that and this and that.
Right.
And that can almost become its own distraction.
Yeah.
And disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just saying in class right before this, I was referring to this book, Tantric Quest, by Daniel Odier. And when he first meets his tantric teacher, she is going to tell him about the five elements that make up the universe in the tantric philosophy: earth, water, fire, air, space. And she lay down on the earth and said, I am experiencing the earth. I feel the earth. I feel it in my breast. I feel it in my thighs. I feel it with my breath in the earth. I smell it. The earth is real. The only thing that's not real is my superficial experience of the earth. And when I first read that, I just said, what? I followed you right up to the point where you had that sentence, and now I don't know what you're talking about, you know? So it took me a while of thinking and pondering and wondering, you know, and meditating on that. And it finally dawned on me that this word, superficial, has the answer built right into it. It means what's above, right? So in our experiencing of things, we have our experiencing of it, and then we have this thing going on in this head that's above, right? In this mind that's above it all. And that's all just a story about the experiencing. So that's the only part of what is that isn't real.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally relate to that.
So when you have your... And it's so common what you were describing, this thrill seeking aspect of, you know, like, how do I have these experiences that seem magical, that seem wonderful, that seem fantastic, that I'm amazed, I'm tapped in, all of that kind of thing. It's so common. It's even written in the Yoga Sutras. You're going to have crazy shit happen. You know, there's going to be powers. They're called siddhi in Sanskrit, as you know. So you're going to have these siddhis. Here's what some of them are, right? Don't get caught up in the siddhis, right? Because that's not the point.
No. And, you know, and going back to that idea about the mind and how the mind is moving superficially, I've started to come into this like realization that in my own experiencing of my life, I narrate what's happening. Like, I will hear myself narrating what just happened. And it makes me think of maybe being like a little girl or something, and trying to reckon with what my experience was in a way that I couldn't understand, or in a way that I was explaining it to myself. And now that I'm in a different place, that mechanism is not always serving me. Mostly it happens unconsciously.
Yeah.
But now when I can hear it, it's charming, and I also don't need to take it and run with it all the time.
Listen, little Jenny's talking again.
Exactly. And now I'm talking to Peter, and, you know, like all of this narration of the story.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting when you start to be a little bit less attached to that, to that dialogue, that inner dialogue. Because what I experience when I'm not so fascinated by my own narration of the events in my life is I'm more present and more available for whatever wants to come in.
What's actually happening.
Right, for what's actually happening, for who I'm actually talking to, for what I'm actually seeing.
Right.
And it's, and that's profound.
Yeah. It's something that I always noticed about Alan, that it almost seems like he has no memory, you know, because you'll ask him about something and he doesn't, you know, it's like he's now on into the present thing. Like, even if it's just something he just did, you know, like, what did you teach today? You know?
Right. Huh.
And it, you know, part of it might just be focus. I mean, obviously there's that too, but there is just this willingness to let go of the story. There's so many times people come in from what, from whatever, from an experience, and they're telling you all about the experience. And now you have to have that experience too, you know, that they had. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's funny. And for me right now, I'm not that interested in talking about what happens to me. And, and my partner will be like, how was that thing you did? And I'm like, good, fine, great. And there, I'm in a place in my development where I just, I don't feel like I need to process things all the time, which is literally the most opposite.
Right.
Like, Peter, you've known me for many years. I love talking about everything that's happening for me. And it's not that it's totally stopped, but there's this awareness, this understanding I'm having that that's not really always so valuable.
Right.
And if anything, my own misbeliefs or my own samskaras, my own patterns that I'm already super attached to are gonna, like, my stories just come up really fast when I'm constantly talking and when I'm always processing. So when I actually don't do that, and when I give myself an opportunity to feel what I'm feeling in the present, in the moment, whatever it is, something else happens.
You want to talk about what that is?
Yeah. It's, well, it's almost like, it's like a type of listening, I would say. It's like watching the birds. There's a spaciousness and there's a capacity. Lately in my classes, I've been talking about how all sensation, all experience, there's a rise, a peak, and then it starts to unravel or unwind. And that process is not verbal. It's energetic. And when I don't talk all the time, I can feel what's happening in my system, and I can feel when things intensify, peak, and start to unravel.
Yeah.
And
we get uncomfortable with that space. It's called being, right? Also, it's like the willingness to just be. And you mentioned the phone before. It's like, it's always there saying, you can engage with me now, so you don't have to just be. Right? But that experience of doing nothing, like sometimes you do stuff and it reaches its peak, of the effort. And maybe it's at the conclusion, like you finish building the fence or you finish milking the cow or, mm-hmm. you know, hunting or fishing or whatever, gathering the berries. And then there's the nothing. And we are very disconnected. That's an extraordinary experience for us now.
Yeah.
We don't take time for that.
Yeah.
You know? I'm guilty of it too. Mm-hmm. I make less time than I should for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Where I notice it is in avoiding some of the things that I used to like to do, like playing music. Hmm. Like, that seems like wasted time now.
Wow.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Because like for 40 years, I was a professional musician. But now like grabbing the guitar is like something I hardly ever do.
Wow.
Even though it's right there.
Yeah. I relate to that. Because mm-hmm. I relate to that from a place where I've started to explore music and singing and toning. And I love it. Mm-hmm. I just could cry how much I love it. And also, I don't always create that space for myself. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gets back to that question of value.
Yeah.
Like, how do we value ourselves?
Right.
And what is the role that we're like, I'm at this right now, or I'm at that right now. And we get so into it. And then because our minds are like these deletion machines that are like, you are only this thing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then we can't let ourselves have the other things that used to be available.
Yeah, I quoted John Lennon in my chat with Douglas, but I'll do it again. It's like, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. You know, that's from one of his songs. And it's such the case, you know?
Totally.
It's like, we're so, again, in the story, mm-hmm. in the mind, mm-hmm. in the superficial relationship with our life, mm-hmm. that we don't necessarily have a noticing that all the things we're doing are our life, you know? And if you pause for 20 minutes and do something meaningless, quote unquote, mm-hmm. that's life too.
Absolutely.
You know, the time you spend with someone else, the time you know, mm-hmm. walk a dog, the time you play music, the time you do nothing, the time you stare at the ocean or watch the leaves meandering. So we make, in our modern world, a retreat to remind ourselves of that.
To give ourselves that space.
Yeah, that it's okay because it's a retreat, so I can do this now.
Right.
But hopefully on the retreat, mm-hmm. one learns that it's okay to do this all the time. Like that can become a little inspiration for a new pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. Totally. And we value that. We say, this is valuable.
Right.
This is valuable to my life.
Right.
I've scraped all my pennies together to say, like, yes, I want this space. Yes, I want this time to focus on myself and what I care about in a broader perspective.
Yeah.
I have a retreat coming up with Wendy Newton, Ulrika Norbury, to Normandy, France. It's a great, great opportunity to spend some time on yourself in a deep way with what Wendy likes to call trusted others, people who can help you sort out what's important, what's not important, what's working, what you could use, otherwise known as really good teachers. So I hope you'll come. We tried to price it just right. It can be easily bundled with a vacation time in Paris or London or anywhere else in Europe. Take a look, peterfurco.com/France2018. See you there. A bientôt.
So back to your notion about value for the things that you're wanting to do, right? Like, how do I establish that sense of value in what I'm doing so that other people will value it too? And then that's maybe my work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a juggling act between karma and dharma and your learning
and our capacity to do this being thing. and to live from that.
Because if you need nothing, right, like in the book Siddhartha, you know, he's a prince and he learns to do meditation. And when he decides he knows more than his teacher, he leaves and he goes to a businessman. And he says, you know, I'll work for you. And he goes, what can you do? He says, I can eat, and I can fast, and I can count. You know? And so it means that he doesn't need food. He doesn't need anything. He needs nothing. But he has a, he has this skill. He can count. And so he's able to do something of value, but he doesn't need much in return. So that's part of it, right? So like if you can be, then you can do whatever you love to do because you don't need anything, right? So if you create a work that has too much overhead, like your life has too much overhead, then you need people to value things at a very high level in order for it to work. And I think that's a part of the problem with the yoga studio model that a lot of yoga studios have suffered over the past 10 years, because so many people created yoga studios and the overhead was high, rent and teacher salaries and all this stuff, somebody at the front desk. It's hard to sustain, you know, because people do value receiving a lesson. They might not value it at the level that it needs to in order to fulfill that level of overhead. You
know? But this is such an interesting idea, what you're presenting right now, that somehow when we are like, and I don't know if I totally get it, so I kind of want to talk about it for a sec, like this idea that if we value, if we don't need anything, if we're getting our contentment and our connection from our practice and cultivating that space, we're fed by that connection. We don't need to seek in the world something that we don't, that we don't have, because we have everything. And in a very experiential way, this does work. And somehow then what we meet, what, you know, what comes to us is going to be in alignment with, and this is maybe the part where I'm making it up, but like that somehow.
There's logic to what you're saying. And the only trick is that figuring out one's karma and one's dharma and the way that's going to unfold is incredibly tricky, because like, you know, if every story was the hero's tale, you'd at least have some sense of where it was going, but you wouldn't necessarily know, well, what are the challenges going to be now, you know, or where am I going to lose the thing I really want and have to go find it again? And how am I going to go find it again? So, I mean, even the hero story has a lot of variables in it, you know, but with all the stories of the entire universe, one of them's yours, you know? So figuring it out to know, how does this unfold? Who knows? You know, like when I lived in LA, I was trying to be a musician and I ended up working as a caterer, right? Serving, right? At parties. And it was great work for me because it was, you took whatever gigs you wanted. I worked for two or three different people. So there was usually work around. I got in really tight with them. So they liked me, I liked them. It wasn't hard. I figured out how to do it. And I got to go to all these great houses in Beverly Hills and whatnot. So it was interesting, right? But it wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I wanted to play music, but it made it possible for me to do that, right? So that was helpful, right? And I didn't have to worry about making money by playing music. I could just play the music I wanted to play, so, which I did. I just mostly played original stuff and played in clubs, you know, that were all original music. And then I eventually got in a band that played cover tunes, and it was not that much fun, but it was okay, you know. But one of the parties I did as a caterer was for a guy who was an attorney. And so he was a pretty senior attorney in a firm, but he had been a singer. He had studied voice in university, and he pictured himself as a singer. So every year, he had a party at his house, catered event in, you know, Pacific Palisades or wherever he lived. And he invited all his colleagues and friends, and he would perform a concert in the middle of this party that he was throwing for them. So He didn't have to worry about money. He didn't have to worry about competing in the classical music vocal world. He didn't have material needs, but he could still do the thing he loved. You know, he could afford the voice coach and the accompanist and a nice piano and all those things. So you never know exactly how it's going to fall in. We have, you know, students here at ISHTA. I have one who started playing in a band when he was 16 with his buddies, you know, and they now have like 30 albums, you know? So he had a totally different experience of, but he's like now at a place where he's not sure he wants to keep doing this anymore. It's like, I don't know if this is my life. So you never know exactly how is that piece going to play out.
Neither one is better or worse, even though our minds want to say, especially in this world, that, you know, celebrity is what we all should be aiming for, that if you're a good meditation teacher, then you should be teaching everywhere and everyone should know your name. But, you know, that's not necessarily true. That's part of the, I think, this delusion that we live in that's so common today.
And it's the opposite of the big magic idea that we're all all that good stuff. And it's a little bit, this occurred to me the other day. I like, even before 2016, I'd been working a lot on this notion of how our society is very wedded to the marketplace and the notions of market and judgment of value of things based on the market, right? And so I even did a photography project at one point where I queried about 50 of my friends and acquaintances and asked them to fill out a survey. Please rank these jobs. And I had a New York magazine that was like, how much do they get paid was the cover story. So it had all these people, fashion model, musician, lawyer, baseball player, you know, how much all these famous people made. And so I abstracted the job. So like, instead of it being like a fashion model, I think I even said did fashion model, but you know, I sort of took it out of the realm of these are like the people who are at the top of their game. And I just said, you know, these jobs, like what these people do. And I listed these jobs and I sent this as a survey to these 50 people. And I said, please rank these in terms of what you think are the most valuable to society. So they gave me this ranking. And I looked at that ranking and I compared it to how much people earned in those jobs. And it was exactly the opposite.
I thought I'd jump in here for a moment to talk about this project that I did in 2009. So what I did, as I described, was to take the rankings of all these famous, well-paid people from New York Magazine and compare it to the ranking that 50 of my acquaintances gave to these same professions. So in order, the valuation by the marketplace went banker, athlete, fashion model, realtor, lawyer, doctor, government representative, school teacher, clergy, and mother. On the flip side, the valuation by the individuals I asked was mother, school teacher, doctor, government representative, clergy, lawyer, banker, athlete, realtor, fashion model, in terms of the importance to society. So it's not so much a judgment about jobs, because obviously there are important positions and people do great work in all kinds of professions. But on the whole, the marketplace has a particular way of valuing those things, and they don't necessarily match up with the way that we would value things if we were doing it from scratch. Right? So no fashion models out there get upset. Okay. I have images that I did for this project on my website, peterfurco.com, under the fine art section. I'll put a link in the show notes. Here's back to our conversation, Jenny and me.
A teacher, on the other hand, mm-hmm. is incredibly valuable to everyone's life, mm-hmm. and they get paid nothing, mm-hmm. right? So like these flips around of what's valuable, right? Mm-hmm. And so the problem I see, and hopefully this will come full circle in a minute, is that we rely on the market to set all of these values. And that has made us into merchants. All of us are thinking like merchants, and that the merchant is the best thing. But if you go back to like Plato's Republic, or you go even to this caste system in India, there's a value assigned to other things besides the merchants. Right? The merchants are one class or one group within society. But because we're so reliant on the marketplace, the merchants are determining the value of everything, mm-hmm. because we make everybody sell their stuff, mm-hmm. whether it's a service or an intelligence or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Even though as like theoretically we realize philosophy is important, mm-hmm. you know, priests are important, mm-hmm. priestesses are important,
mm-hmm. healers,
mothers are important.
Yeah.
But we don't have a way to value them in the marketplace, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So because of that, we're all screwed up in terms of like, how do I make a living doing this thing? Unless what you love to do, what mm-hmm. your dharma and your karma are calling is, I'm going to make an app that everybody wants.
Right. Or that you're a merchant.
Yeah.
That, you know,
which makes you a merchant.
Right.
Right.
Or like you're someone who's really good at selling things.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think that it, in some ways, because in from the tantric perspective, we talk about these different periods in human history, and essentially the period in the beginning, everyone knew they were magic and everyone was magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second period, only some people were magic, but everyone knew magic was real.
Right.
In the third period,
We
discount magic, but there's still a lot of magical people. And we're in that fourth period now where most people don't know magic is real and most people don't have a connection with
and
that.
And magic being that extraordinary thing that's mm-hmm. there mm-hmm. if you just participate in it.
Right. So we're obsessed as a culture with the physical, with just the most gross.
Right.
And we lack a value, or we don't as a culture value the more subtle.
Right.
Which is...
There's no mechanism for valuing it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And every now and then somebody breaks through.
Right.
You know, Deepak Chopra found a way to break through some of that mm-hmm. by coming from, I think, because he came from the medical realm.
Right, right.
And so there was already a value assigned to him because we value doctors so much
right.
in our culture.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
So he had a pre-established value level mm-hmm. and then was able to introduce all of these mm-hmm. other more subtleties.
Totally.
And so that's an interesting thing to see. But
not everyone is going to be Deepak
not
Chopra.
Not everyone can have that path, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel sometimes with this, the dialogue that goes on in our politics, that the solution that's being offered to us is go back into your history and make better choices, right? Where better choices means you're choosing to be a doctor or a lawyer or a banker or somebody who's mm-hmm. going to, you know, invent something really saleable.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But that thought completely limits the beauty and the diversity of our society. And so I think maybe a good inspiration from this talk, something positive to come out of it with, is how can we value each other and each other's gifts in a way that our whole society becomes richer?
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely possible through our actions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that even the smallest amount of that makes the difference, you know, like, I mean, that's been something interesting about this political moment mm-hmm. that thanks to Senator Sanders, mm-hmm. this idea that individuals have power, you don't have to be a corporation, you don't have mm-hmm. to be a wealthy donor mm-hmm. to make a difference.
Right.
That's a significant gift that he provided. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in politics, right?
Right.
Like
right.
when you see an artist at an exhibition mm-hmm. and they're just fledgling. They're mm-hmm. not blue chip.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy something from them.
Yeah.
That makes a difference. That values creativity
yeah.
in general.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When you see somebody playing music on the subway and you toss them 50 cents.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, when you go to a yoga workshop,
mm-hmm.
because it looks interesting, even though it's, well, it's a little bit more than I usually pay for 20 buck classes. I'm not mm-hmm. going to spend 35 on a mm-hmm. workshop when I can get the same thing in a $20 class. That's like
mm-hmm.
not valuing that. The
energy that the teacher, like the energy that you
can
get from that.
The whole thing. Why do you like that teacher in the first place? Because they've done all this work
mm-hmm.
and study and preparing, and now they're mm-hmm. offering something
mm-hmm.
like supportive, or, you know,
yeah.
for your own sake, so that this can still be in the world.
Right.
You know?
Right. We have so much value. And even in just the personal, right? In just
yeah.
taking that moment to be.
Yeah.
It has the same value
yeah.
as any of these actions.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And every now and then I'll run into this circumstance where I'm thinking I'm going to buy X that I really need,
mm-hmm.
but it's got like the price tag that's $25 higher than what I just will yank out of my wallet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Lately I've been thinking, because the price of food has become so exorbitant in New York City, mm-hmm. you know, I'll just go, wait, how much am I not spending on this thing that I really need? That's like dinner. You know, if Wendy and I go out to dinner, yeah. I would drop that.
Yeah. No question.
No question.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So, you know, then the flip side of that is you don't want to run out of money. So you can't just be throwing money at everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but maybe there's another way that mm-hmm. you can support things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I tried to do that with the podcast. Like, I tried to figure out, how can I not make people listen to this ads? Because I hate listening to ads. I literally,
mm-hmm.
fishing my phone out of my bag, hitting the fast forward button
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
each time one of these ads comes on.
Yeah.
And, you know? And so I thought, okay, well, let's try this other thing. And mm-hmm. it has the ability to value at all these different levels.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's not successful enough mm-hmm. at the moment,
mm-hmm.
but it's what it is.
Right.
It's a part of the whole of all the things I'm doing
mm-hmm.
to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I work to keep my requirements low.
Yeah.
Not quite Siddhartha, where I'm just fasting all the time.
Right.
Because I'm too skinny for that.
Right. Yeah. That wouldn't work for you.
Yeah.
I would have to come around and feed you.
Yeah. But see, you could do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
That could be your valuing of what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is such a beautiful idea, right? That like when we come together as a society, when we bring our gifts to each other,
mm-hmm.
that is what makes us wealthy.
Right.
And the more that we have the capacity and the understanding that that's what we're doing.
Right.
That is valuable.
Right.
Like the richer we all become.
Yeah.
Both in that you have, you know, you're eating the croissant and also in that we are connected.
Right.
And it's our connections
that's right.
with
it's
each
an
other.
Us.
Yes.
Yes. It's an us.
It's an us.
And that's another thing that gets lost in this political moment.
Mm-hmm.
This notion of an us that's bigger than me
mm-hmm.
and maybe my family and maybe a couple of my relatives.
Mm-hmm. Right. Know? Or getting stuck in the charge.
Yeah.
I was sitting in this bench in Union Square the other day, and somebody came and started talking to me. And, I, you know, that used to happen to me all the time, but now it doesn't happen to me as much. And I was able to really listen to him, kind of have his thing. He wanted to get into a thing about Trump with me, and I didn't want to get into a thing with him at all. But what was interesting was I invited him to share with me his life, and he told me all about how he had gotten a passport recently and was able to go back to Gaza, which is where he's from,
mm-hmm.
and to see what it was like there, and then to come back to New York where he has a press pass, and how he goes to all of these different gatherings with really wealthy people, and how mad he is that there's so much wealth in some
right.
pockets and then there's so much poverty in other
right.
pockets. And I was really able to witness him in this place and give him the reflection that he's a person who moves between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is of great value.
Mm-hmm. Right. To yeah. be able to share that perspective with the other side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's so interesting because we often find we get so, I think, caught in these like the physical, right? In like the densest piece, like I don't like what this government is doing, and therefore I need to rage, and we need to do like, and you know, that's one perspective. It's valuable in its own right, but everyone has their own relationship. And when we actually see ourselves and see what am I doing, and find that valuable, then suddenly there's a different energy that we bring.
Yeah.
So that when he goes to these events, you know, like, I don't know if any of this was communicated to him in any way, but I was able to really receive that understanding from talking to him.
Right.
So regardless of what he's aware of, the interplay between his energy and my energy was able to give me that understanding.
Right.
That I then carry and share with you and share with all of our listeners.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of certainly explicitly in a teacher. Teachers are like listening for things to learn, right?
Yes.
Because the job of a teacher is then to teach things one needs to learn. So, you know, you're like tuned in to all those things in that way, so that when students come to you and they say something, you've already reflected on that and you can then offer that. And it sounds like, oh my God, how do you know that? You're so brilliant, your teacher, right? But it's because that's your job. That's what you spend your time doing. That's the thing of value that you're creating.
And it's your learning.
Yeah. And then the finding of that, how does one value that? How do you get that to be valued? That's that whole dance, right? So the more flexible you can be in terms of how do I get myself into those circumstances in which I am available as that teacher, short of sitting on a park bench all day long, that's what you try to do. How can I be more available?
And you hold that intention.
Right. And then the ways become clear, right? And it's not always just doing more. Go do more. Go take another certification.
Right.
You know, go work on my website. Go, you know, go do Instagram. Be on Instagram all day long, all the time. So that every time anybody looks at Instagram, it's me. You know, I mean,
it's so wild. It's so wild how our world has become that, and we think that, and oftentimes it's just coming out of this deep-seated insecurity that we have.
Yeah, I've been watching this crazy show, this Indian version of the Ramayana.
And Wild Wild West? Or is it that one?
No, it's just Ramayana.
Oh, okay.
But the guy who's playing Rama. He's the incarnation of Vishnu on Earth, right? So he's both a human, so he's got all of the challenges of living a human life, but he has incredible intuition because he's literally the sustainer of the universe at the same time, right? So he just goes, right? He just goes from place to place to place. And as he's going, anytime some challenge comes up, everybody wants to say, no, that can't be. You don't make them do that. And he's like, I got to do this. This is what's supposed to happen. Right? So it's like he's accepting of his karma, of whatever comes up. There's some reason for it. And what's cool about this story is because it's taking place on the celestial level as well as the earth level, you get to hear some of the why, right? Like this person who he's interacting with now, in a past life, they were this and they did this, and so they get this boon, or they had to pay this price for the karma that they gathered in that other circumstance. So it's kind of fun in that regard.
Totally.
But it's interesting to think about that as you're going through your own life, you know, that to use that as sort of a model that, well, this thing is going on, and instead of just fighting it, I could just take it as what's supposed to be. And it happens on the plus side as well, which is where I wanted to get to with this, that things just fall, that saying we have, fall into your lap. There, that's what's supposed to happen. You know, that's not just like luck. It's like, that's what's presenting you the opportunity. and that's the thing you do.
Right.
But you again have to be open to it, you know, like,
and present.
Yeah. And even some, you know, more enlightened business advisor type people will say, you know, being in the right place at the right time involves having done all the right work beforehand so that you're in that place at that time.
Yes. Yes. Totally. And all of your failures up until that point.
Please support Peter's podcast on patreon.com. Your support is what keeps this in your ears. Check it out.
Like, you know, sometimes it's like enlightenment, right? Sometimes it happens like the first time you meditate, boom, you reach samadhi.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you have to sit for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And then, oh, maybe you reach into that place that is beyond. But they're both the same.
Yeah.
Which is hard to really get. It's hard to really get how are they both the same. Like, how is it the same for someone who's successful on their first try and someone who's successful on their
50th?
Because
that's not about success. That word is the wrong word, right? You can only do the doing, and then you have to let go. And that's the extraordinary. The extraordinary is what goes on beyond your little sense of you doing in the world, right? So in addition to you doing your stuff, we're such control freaks, right? And we're taught to be control freaks in our culture right now, right? When you're done doing, there's more stuff. There's more of what is beyond your doing. But all you can do is the doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to just be.
And allow and surrender.
It's all the same stuff. It's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. So the person who's doing a practice, but then something's going on and they're thinking it's not successful, it is successful because they're not doing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped the doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you intend, I'm going to not be here right now. I'm going to allow myself to have the other aspect of what I am be the priority in my presence. That's success. That is who we are when we're not doing. But we're never not either of those things, right? Like when you become transcendent in samadhi and you lose track of time and space and you're just gone for 4 seconds or 4 minutes, your body doesn't go away. The other people sitting in the room, you're still over there, right?
Totally.
You're never not that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, you're never not infinite intelligence. You're never not Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
All of it is all the same stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But your superficial relationship to it, it bounces all over the place.
Right.
Right.
And that can be that can be what is on the screen of the mind.
Yeah.
So that's why we work to clear that screen.
Yeah.
So that we can actually be in relationship with Brahman. So we can actually be reflecting that unbound field and not our own patterns of whatever they are.
Yeah.
Because
like that noticing that you did on the park bench.
Mm-hmm.
That happened because you were quiet.
Right. And I was in my own place.
Yeah.
Like that was like, me ending up at that park bench was me saying, okay, well, I guess universe, I'm not supposed to do the thing I thought I was supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to sit here on this park bench and just feel my system.
Yeah.
And then that thing came in.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, unproductive time.
Unproductive time.
And it became productive.
Very, very valuable.
Right?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
It's neat.
This is the place where I ask, please rate Peter's podcast. Thank you so much. Please go to Patreon and support Peter's podcast. Thank you so much. Please keep listening by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm even on Spotify right now. So do that so you can keep posted on everything that's going on. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
And, you know, the thing is, when you're thinking about it in the ways that you described in the beginning, like this magic and sensation, and, you know, I've had a lot of students and who some of them come in, you know, more on the physical side of things, and they're just trying to learn what is yoga, how do you do it, right? But some of them come in and they're like more intrigued with the whole spirituality and the you know, the paintings and the like the wow and you know, and I think of that as like experience seeking. It's a different vibration of experience, but it's no different from the experience of, can I do a handstand? What does that feel like? Ooh, it feels so cool that I can do a handstand. Ooh, it feels so cool that I can see colors when I close my eyes. Oh, it feels so cool that I'm spaced out. And I don't know where I am. You know,
that makes me feel better because I don't really do handstands. And I've never really cared that much about it. But it's interesting because there are two different ways of reaching that. And what you're saying is that, like, either one, that, like, goal-driven, I want to have this experience thing is like a primary stage of like developing yoga practice, that like a lot of people come in with that, with that intention. And that's okay.
As though that experience were somehow Brahman.
Right.
It's not Brahman.
Right. And that's phase two, right? So phase one is like, you know, I want to do a handstand, or I want to see fancy colors. Right.
Yeah.
And then you come and you start to do a practice, and something, perhaps if you're fortunate, shifts, and you realize exactly what you're saying. Oh, this is not Brahman. These pretty colors are not Brahman.
Yeah, they're just an aspect of experience.
Right.
They're special if you don't have them before, right? But if, like, for your whole life, you always knew when your best friend was going to call, they don't seem special.
Right.
If you never had that before, and suddenly you're feeling a little clairvoyant, it's like, holy crap, I'm clairvoyant now. Wow. Right?
Right.
It's just another thing to get over.
Right.
And
right.
to stop.
Right.
And to be.
Right. Because our excitement about that aspect is not what makes it exist.
Yeah. Yeah. It exists. It bees.
It bees.
Well, I think that's a great place to stop. So thank you, Jenny, for this lovely chat. Oh,
thank you, Peter. This was really fun. Namaste.
's today's episode. I hope you've enjoyed my talk with Jenny. Please come to France. We're also going to be all over Europe. So if you check out on my website, peterfurco.com, I'll keep a list of where we're going to be. We're going to be at least in Finland, Sweden, France, Germany, and we'll see if we're anywhere else. Check it out. Namaste.